This is a good question.
Are you really going to start an episode of your own show with a long, here we are.
I am. And I also think that every good question starts with, this is a good question.
Yeah, I agree. It's also, it's like when it's like, that's funny.
I do that.
But you did earlier today. Someone pitched you an idea and you were like, that's funny. With the least humor ever transmitted.
What is your toxic trait?
I just keep playing toxic people on worldwide hits, maybe, is what I keep doing. And then I speak about it too publicly.
My toxic trait is that I cannot resist Oreo cookies. And I cannot, like, and by I cannot resist, it's like if there's a pack in my home, the whole first row devoured in a day. I've never had a pack of Oreos not get thrown away because at some point I feel guilty about how quickly I'm eating them. So I'll, like, buy a whole package and then eat, like, half of it and then throw the other half away. That's pretty toxic.
You know, that is very toxic.
I feel like that's toxic, like, for your frame of mind, but it's not. I was thinking toxic is more like, what do you do? It's bad for people. That's bad for the world.
When people ask this question, it's like cheeky.
I don't understand that.
That's not how Ben operates.
I don't really understand. Yeah. You're fun.
Yeah.
Is it?
Light, playful.
Mine mixes both, you know, some anti-environmental action in there.
Yeah, okay, sure, fair. Yeah, so my most toxic trait is throwing things away. Sorry, I'll think of one, so go.
But if Oreo would like to sponsor me on this podcast, I will accept.
Oreo, if you want to sponsor us, however, you got to pay me. This was particularly bad during season 3 when I needed the sleep. Needed the sleep so bad with a newborn and working on the season 3 of my show. Watching videos of Lionel Messi.
Really? Yeah. That's surprising. I did
like,
not know.
And we're talking like, I found that it was happening just too late. And my breath, it's just, spending too long on YouTube.
Like breathing on your phone? Like, how does the breath play into
No,
this?
I'm just saying like, I could feel how deeply I wasn't breathing. Because I was like on my phone, you know? And it just, you know.
Oh, I have another toxic trait.
Go ahead. Let's just list them.
No, my other toxic trait, and poor Sophie has experienced this because we're sharing a hotel room, is that I can't fall asleep unless there's TV on.
Oh, really?
It's the difference between falling asleep in 15 minutes or 2.5 hours.
You're kidding.
Truly. Yes.
I was thinking about that on the train. I was like, I think Nava really needs to work on that.
I do.
There was
a
time for me where I had that. I know it was in my 20s, but I also want to say, Messi brings me joy too. So it's not just a toxic. It's like I could feel it on my phone, but then at the same time, it was like moments of, it was like rare moments of like just actual just. Yeah.
So your toxic trait is experiencing joy.
I'm not going to tell you my toxic trait, but I will tell you David's.
I have one for you.
I would love to hear that.
Well, it's just based on the conversation we had recently. Is it hoarding?
A little bit.
Mild hoarding.
Yes.
Although her home is beautiful and organized.
No, your guys' home is so...
It's so beautiful and organized.
But
hoarding where?
I do this thing
that's what
where...
That's I said. I was like, in a storage
ever
unit?
Ever since I started
hoarding?
Making art...
No. Hoarding or hoarding?
Ever since I started making art, I cannot throw things away. Like... I will have, like, you know, one of those paper bags, gift bags, like a brown craft paper bag. I will, like, cut off the handles and save them because I'm like, well, I might use them in a collage. You never know. And everything is an art material suddenly.
But your home is so organized that I feel like you're just making art all the time then because you're using it. There's, like, no waste.
Thank you.
Lying around. Is that not accurate?
Yeah, no, that's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound toxic at all. It sounds like you're bragging.
I do end up using a lot of them. But like, David's toxic
I'm so economic.
Trait.
I just can't waste
my toxic
throw
trait
anything.
Is that I'm crafty and artsy.
And that I'm single-handedly saving the world.
I use Nava's thrown away Oreos in my art.
I use these two trash.
I just can't bear for them to go to the landfill.
David
will watch a show in, like, a whole season of a show in a matter of hours, like a couple hours, because he gets so bored with the dialogue that he's like, once he gets the gist of a scene, he just hits that arrow
that
button
is
and is like, tick, 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 tick.
I feel attacked.
Especially
as
Ben's
a maker
show.
Of television, I am offended in my core.
I told David, I was like, I love you so much. I love you so much. There's nothing I hate about you, and there's nothing that like stresses me out, but this gives me the ick. I cannot abide.
It's for me, it's crazy.
It's so wild.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's crazy, David. I can't abide either. Can't abide either. David, have you watched my show? No, I don't want to hear him talk back. I don't want to hear it. You know who wouldn't fast forward through my show?
Who?
Well, actually, I don't know this is true. The truth is, I think she's not seen it.
I think she told me,
but her girlfriend has seen it and loves it. So, our guest today is Lily Singh, a multi-talented comedian, actress, and YouTuber. She's got an audience of over 40 million on her social media. Her career has spanned so many fields. She was the host of the NBC talk show A Little Late with Lily Singh. It's amazing that they found somebody with the same name for the gig. Anyway, sorry, that's that one fell flat.
we know why Penn wasn't the host.
Yeah. Because I was starring on Gossip Girl. she's been in a number of films and TV shows. She's the author of How to Be a Boss, A Guide to Conquering Life. That book reached the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list back in 2017. Yeah. She's currently the star of the Disney Plus series, The Muppets Mayhem. We really loved having her. We think you'll love her too.
Guys, crushies, pod crushers. I don't know where we've landed.
Crusheries, crusherinos.
I like crusherinos.
Crusherinos. Okay.
Crushies, pod crushers, listeners, we want to know what your toxic trait is. Let us know in the comments.
Don't at me, though. Welcome to Pod Crushed. We're your hosts. I'm Penn.
I'm Sophie.
And I'm Nava. And I think we would have been your middle school besties.
Which means we love you so much, but we're also deeply threatened by you.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
First of all, it is lovely to have you here.
It's lovely to be here.
I mean, this is not, I don't recall ever saying this to a guest. And I hope you take it the right way. You look amazing.
Thank you.
Which is never said that to a guest.
I will take that all day, every day.
He's never said that to a guest.
Okay, no, so I want to be honest. I mean, we have, I think, mostly female guests on the show, but I did. But for a moment, I thought, well, I don't want to sound somehow like I'm making a comment.
This is going to be the first time you see a brown person blush, because I will take this. I'm going to take this. And also, I love that you're saying this after I've just for people, I have complete hair and makeup done, right?
Yeah. She doesn't look good. I also know that, but I know that in my world, in our world, you know, it's
You're looking all right yourself, my friend.
All right. Emphasis on all right.
No, you look great. Y'all look great. Y'all look amazing. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. From what I understand, I mean, you were born in a like very predominantly South Asian immigrant community, or what would you, how would you, I mean, because you talk about growing up where I had to check, I was like, oh, okay, she was born in Toronto, but there's so much Indian culture there, right?
Yes. So in Toronto, there's a lot of everyone there. Like, I am very blessed and privileged to say I grew up with all types of people around me. Mm. However, I am from, my parents are from Punjab, India, and there weren't that many Punjabi people in my school. I was probably like one of five maybe in my school. However, there were a lot of Sri Lankan people, a lot of Jamaican people, so it was a huge diverse school, yes. Mm-hmm. But it was this interesting balance of like, I didn't feel any racism towards me, but I also sometimes did struggle to find people to relate to. It was like a balance of both a little bit.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
What had being a girl meant to you up until this point, and what did it feel like looking out into the horizon of becoming a woman?
Right. 12, 13 is like, what grade are you in? 12, 13.
7th, 8th.
6th, 7th.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. 7th, pretty much.
Yeah. For a lot of, well, if I could paint you a picture of what I looked like in grade 6.
Yeah, please. Give us all the details.
I was wearing jeans that were four sizes too big for me.
Awesome.
For sure. Yeah. I was wearing a t-shirt that 100% said The Rock on it. 100%. Okay. I had my long hair. I was the biggest tomboy ever. Yeah. I was obsessed with wrestling. Like, when I say that, I was obsessed. Wow. I was obsessed with wrestling to the point where my teachers would literally call me Lily the Rock Johnson. Like, it was like a thing. Good. My first email address, the_rock85@hotmail.com. I was a nerd, like a big, big nerd. I regret nothing. But for a lot of my, you know, elementary school life, it was that. It was me being a tomboy and me liking all these things that, you know, traditionally are not things girls are supposed to like. And and I think a lot of cultures, especially South Asian culture, that becomes very, you become very aware of that because it's constantly told to you, right? Like, this is what girls are supposed to wear. This is what girls are supposed to like. And my parents never said no. But there was always just a little bit of like, this is a phase. She'll grow out of it. Eventually she'll like, you know. At a young age, I remember also like, being a person in high school, I was like, would fantasize about my wedding. And I'm like, what kind of messed up? If you think about it, like, how many young girls do you just fantasize about their wedding? I'm like, that's messed up if you think about it. That you think as a young girl that the highlight of your life is going to be marrying someone. I'm like, what? It's so messed up. So I was a tomboy, but I also still had some of these, like, traditionally girlier thoughts because they would be fed to me.
Yeah, Lily, you say you were obsessed with wrestling, was it, like, you liked to play or you consumed all of the wrestling
all
content?
All of the things. So I liked to watch it. I was obsessed with The Rock. Like, we know I had the cardboard cutout of him.
Wow.
I would write about it in school projects. I would save money to go to the wrestling events. Just everything across the board. I was obsessed.
What was so appealing?
Well, it was the talk of everyone in my school. Everyone in my school really liked wrestling. And I always had, like, I was, like, not to sound cliche, but I was, like, one of the guys. You know, I would always be the guys talking about wrestling. It's something about The Rock particularly, Dwayne Johnson, that I appealed to. Maybe it's because he was one of the few people that, like, kind of looked like me. Yeah. And I kind of, that attracted me to him. But it's just his charisma.
Yeah.
And the storylines. Like, as a six-year-old, you're like, oh, my God. My life will end if The Rock loses the championship. Like, my life will end, actually, today.
Right, there are storylines. I forget that. As a person who just somehow never tapped into that.
Really.
It's like, it is a story.
Yes.
I mean, it's very much like a soap opera.
It's like a soap, 100% a soap opera, yes.
Lily, you just described yourself as one of the guys in elementary and middle school. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, did you feel more comfortable with guys than with girls? And what do you think contributed to that?
I just feel like I was never really like other girls in the sense of like they really were subscribing. And maybe that's genuinely who they are, so that's fine.
Yeah.
So like some things I wasn't interested in. Like I didn't really care about talking about like boys and like crushing on people. And like I didn't really care about fashion at that time. And I could not care less about makeup at the time. So I think it's my interests. You know, I just was kind of more open about them being different, to be honest.
Yeah, that makes
I've
sense.
Always been that way, much to my parents' dismay. I've always been very like, but this is what I like.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to like what you want. Like, this is what I like. And that's been really great, but also super challenging. Because life, let's be real, what is life if not a bunch of people at different stages in your life trying to put you into a box? Mm-hmm. And for my entire life, whether it's what I want to wear, what I want to do as my job, what I wanted to identify as, who I wanted to be with, like every step of my life, like the universe created me in a way where they're just like, you're going to be against all of it. Mm-hmm. You're going to need so much therapy for so many reasons. Like, we're going to make you against all of it.
Wow. Can we actually get into your parents a little
bit?
I mean, obviously you're one of the greatest YouTube icons. You know?
I'm obsessed with you.
I'm obsessed with
like,
you.
You're just so
you just
sweet
made
and supportive.
My life.
Oh my God. Thank you.
I'm going to blush now. And one of the things that helped you blow up were your sketches about your parents.
Yeah.
So I want to know, what is your real relationship with your parents like? What was it like back then? And how did they feel about those sketches?
Yes, of course. So let me just first say, because I don't want my parents to kill me, those characters are just inspired by my parents, but they're actually very different from my parents. My parents growing up were on more of the liberal side. Like they weren't, they had some strict rules, but they weren't like that stereotypical parent we see on TV. My parents were not that. I had a little bit of a rough relationship with my parents growing up, like most teens do, because, you know, I wanted to rebel and do all the things. I'd say right now, my mom is like my best friend.
Aww.
Like, she is honestly something I'm most proud of in my life, actually, when I think about all my achievements, is my current relationship with my mom.
I love that.
Because I think there's so many reasons as to why it couldn't be the way it is. I came out, I did YouTube, I did all these things that, like, everyone in the community would probably tell her, like, your daughter's doing this, why is she doing this? It's so against what we're used to. She has every reason to be like, you are difficult and you make my life hard. But she is just completely also rise to that occasion to be like, no, my daughter is doing something different. And, like, I'm learning from her and we're learning from each other. So, like, I really applaud that because when you're a minority, the challenge is you can't separate yourself from your parents. You can't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are mentioned in every interview and every podcast, and especially because I made videos about them. So not only am I forced to rise to the occasion of my job, but my parents are also forced by what just inevitably to rise to the occasion as well.
Does that ever feel like a pressure for you? Like, for me, sometimes I feel like there's certain things I can't say. Also, I don't want to. Like, I don't want to go live and like speak ill of my parents. Right. You know, everybody has faults, but I just wonder if that also gives you some pressure.
Do I feel pressure? Yes, yes, yes. Let me look at the camera. Yes, I feel pressure. It is something I'm actively working on. In fact, in my last therapy session, let's get deep here, I was talking to my therapist about this because there's a lot of things in my childhood. You know, I have a very public life, but there's a lot of things that I'm hesitant to talk about because it's not just my story. Mm-hmm. It's also the story of my parents and my family members. And that gets tricky because you're like, how do I talk about myself and honor my own experience without also making everyone else's experiences super public? That's a tricky line
it's
to toe.
It's very, very tricky.
It's very hard.
For a long time.
Yeah. And so I think where I am now is I'm constantly negotiating that space. But I think where I am now is that I would rather just get better at having those real conversations with my parents.
Yeah.
And knowing that, like, maybe not everything can be something I talk about in an interview, but that is maybe okay. And that's maybe where that compromise has to be, as long as I can be very open to my parents. Because I think what's difficult is if you're not open in public and to your friends, but you're also not having those conversations at home with your parents, that can be a really lonely place, place to live in. And so my goal has been to just be a lot more open with my parents and talk about, are you ready for this? My feelings.
Yeah.
My feelings with my parents.
Yeah. How are things with your dad?
They're good. I love my dad a lot. I will probably say I'm probably closer to my mom.
Yeah.
My dad and I, we have an interesting dynamic. So we love each other and we're strangely competitive with each other.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's very strange. And I'll tell you the psychology of this. Yeah. It is that, you know, we're part of a culture where the man, it's a patriarchal culture, the man takes care of things. He's supposed to make the money, he's supposed to dominate, he's supposed to be in charge, he's supposed to be the one that, like, makes it for the family. My dad is very successful. However, now he has a daughter that is very successful.
Yeah.
Right? And so now he has a daughter that perhaps has a car that he's like, why do you have that car? Why do you? So we love each other, but we have this little bit of, like, so if I call and be like, Dad, I got this new car. He's like, oh, yeah, but do you know what car I just bought your mom? And he'll start telling me all the features of the new car. And I'm like, no, Dad, I'm not trying to compete. He's like, no, I just want you to know. I just want you to know. And then when I bought my house, like, one of the first questions, like, congrats. One of the first questions is, so how many square feet is that house? And I'm like, well, why? How many square feet is your house? Whatever yours is, mine is plus 10. It's plus 10 of your house. So it's like, it's not like super serious, but there is definitely a little bit of like competitive nature for sure.
That makes sense.
That's a fun way of saying it's unhealthy.
No. Well, nothing. It's sure. Right. But it actually, it does sound like the most fun version of dysfunction, maybe?
Yes, totally. I mean, I definitely went through a period of life where I was like most people, my parents, I just don't know how we're ever going to see eye to eye. I just don't know how we're ever going to have a relationship. And I got to give I'm at the age now where I can give my parents the props they deserve because I have put them through the ringer. Like, I have. Whether or not it's right or wrong is not the conversation. Like, if we're talking about, like, sexuality, I'm not saying that, like, it's right, it's wrong for you. It's not about right or wrong. It's about they are from a time and place where that is still hard no matter what.
Yeah.
And so I give them major props because at every time I have, like, taken them for a whirlwind, they have just been like, all right, we are going to figure out how to be supportive parents. And so that's really tough.
Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I do.
What's that like?
I have an older sister. She is 6 years older than me, which is like a pretty common age difference, but it's also pretty large. So she was kind of like a parent to me growing up sometimes. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes till this day, and I don't mean this offensively in any way, sometimes I'm more scared to tell her something than I'm scared to tell my mom something till this day. She just crushed it as an Indian daughter, like friggin' crushed it. Married a baptized sick guy, has three sons, just got the degree, did everything, nailed it. Yeah. Just nailed it. And which was great because, and she nailed it to the point where a lot of my aunts and uncles don't even feel bad being like, she's our favorite. Like, they'll say, like, she's nailed it to that degree.
Wow.
But she's awesome and I'm proud of her. And honestly took a lot of pressure off of me. I feel like I could have zero kids now and it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because my parents have 3 grandkids either way.
Yeah.
You know?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So did you grow up in the Sikh faith?
I grew up, so my family's not very religious. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I was probably one of the most religious members of my family.
Really?
And I'm going to say an extra LA thing right now, which is I'm not religious, I'm spiritual.
Yeah, that is the most LA.
Yeah, and so I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. I believe in God. I talk to God every day. But I, as someone in the public eye, and maybe you all can relate, religion can feel very icky in the public space because it's used as ammo more than it's used for unity, in my opinion.
It's true.
And so even if I have certain beliefs about, like, God and religion, I try not to be super public about them because I'm like, it's doing for me great things, and I don't want you to now turn that into something that can be used as an attack against me. Like, I don't think that's a healthy relationship to have.
Yeah.
You know, I used to get comments that were like, when I had, you know, religious structures on my wall or something, or paintings of them. In my early YouTube videos, I would literally get comments that would say, how dare you wear a tank top in the same room as that picture? And I was like,
people started judging you harder.
You really hate women out here. Like, okay. It's like, I don't want to deal with that. Like, you know, that's just not where I'm trying to be.
That makes sense.
I totally respect that. And I think that's probably a good take. I wonder about something you said earlier,
Please.
Which is that you were probably the most religious person in your family growing up. I'm so intrigued by that because I feel like as a child, I mean, maybe I don't know if that's unique. It sounds unique to me. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that more?
Yeah, so my family didn't go to the temple consistently. I actually at one point went every day by myself.
Wow.
As a kid growing up.
At what age? I'm curious.
A little bit older. I say kid as if I'm... Kid means like...
16?
University.
Okay.
Yeah, high school,
sure.
University.
Yeah.
Right. I went by myself.
Wow.
Did a lot of religious reading, a lot of religious volunteering. And I still believe in a lot of those values of like service, volunteer, believing in God. But it got to I think what pulled me away from it is exactly what I just talked about, is it became a lot about like rules and what to do and not to do and about controlling And I'm not saying this about my religion specifically or my temple specifically. It's just like that's kind of how people were talking about religion to me. Yeah. And I was like, this is not the conversation I want to be part of. Yeah. So I still believe in a lot of the same things, but I refuse to let people attack me over it.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. It's interesting. I'm religious. I'm Baha'i. Mm-hmm. And I do, I'm sort of someone that like, I like to share anything that I think is useful to me.
Yes.
So I'll post like an Instagram story of like, I started using this moisturizer and it's like my favorite moisturizer. So there was like, and I'll post about religion or God.
Right.
And a few weeks ago I posted something, I don't remember what, but about something about God that I felt was like an insight that helped me. And someone DM'd me and was like, I really like you, but it makes me cringe anytime you post anything about God. And I just think you should know that that's cringy.
And I just think you should
you're
know.
Cringy.
Like everything God is cringy. Everything else about you is so lovely. And I sat with it. I wasn't upset at all that she said it because I actually felt like she was sort of like, you're so great, but you don't know how you're coming off. Mm. But I sort of sat with like, am I going to let that deter me? And I feel like, no, like, I wasn't upset that she shared that, but, and I'm not, this isn't, like, a counter take
to
yours.
No, absolutely not,
Like, it's like, oh, you have to weigh it, but, because some people hate it when you do that stuff, but it's just like, I find that it's useful, and I wish more people talked about their relationship with God, because it would help me. Like, there are tips to make that relationship stronger.
I think the general rule of thumb should be, you raise an interesting point, it's like, people, I wish the culture was more encouraging of people of, like, take from anything and anyone what helps you be better.
Exactly. Yeah.
But don't attack what does not.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I also talk about God a lot, and I do get comments like that as well.
Yeah.
And I'll get the, like, talk about this more, talk about it. I'm like, take what helps you instead of trying to change me into what you think helps you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think this entitlement of, like, everyone has to give me what I need from them is, like, just, you're never going to be happy if that's your mentality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's two things. A, well, she's going to hell, clearly. B, or two.
Facts, big facts.
Is that...
God, sketch idea. Sketch idea. Gates of heaven. I see you called me cringy under an Instagram comment one time.
Straight to hell.
Yeah, in 2023, you called me cringy, and so I'm going to have to... Like, what are we doing?
We know God is petty as well.
Yeah.
But honestly, that makes me... That clarified something for me about comments. Mm. It makes me think about also how we're limited to our engaging with each other, because I feel like it to me. That's like such an odd, simultaneously thoughtful and thoughtless comment, or like it's just sort of, you know. But then it does make me think, like, how often would anybody ever say any of these things if they were just face to face with the person? And it's like never. Like there is a very false relationship when people talk about parasocial relationships. There's a construct there that's just never happening in any other scenario. Absolutely. So I mean, it's weird. Anyway,
no, it's true. Like, I can ask you this. You said you get a lot of comments. Has anyone ever in your life come up to you and said a mean one of the mean comments? Please don't say yes.
That's a great question.
He's like, actually, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, so I think that there is not outright, like, the kind of some of the worst things have been commented about me. Of course not.
Right.
Of course not. We have had a guest on here who basically did, who was just sort of immediately.
Who are? What's
treated.
Their name? What's their name? What's their name? Where do they live?
Well, we talked about it. It was Sophia Bush.
She was you know, she had this interaction with a person who just basically was an in person troll, like in a really
filming her, called her a TV prostitute.
Yeah, just like really in a really aggressive, anomalous, like awful way.
Yeah.
But I guess what you know, that question you had, Lily, about has anybody ever walked up to me and like spoken to me like they would comment? No, but I do think what happens is the interesting thing where, because if they know me and they're that excited by it, they're accustomed to me not being there in real time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I know this is because it just happens all the time. I wouldn't, you know, if it was just happening once or a couple times, I wouldn't notice the trend.
No, we get it. We get it. You're famous.
It's happened a lot.
Yeah, we get it. You're famous.
Yeah. Well, very.
I would say get out of here. Get out of here.
For a very long time.
Get out of here.
For nearly two decades.
While you were wearing the Rock t-shirts, Lily. Yes.
I was wearing my own t-shirt.
Yeah. For a second there, I thought you were telling me that someone came on the show as a guest and said something mean to you.
To me.
I was going
to
be like, the audacity.
I know.
That's what I thought too. I was like, was it when Jamila told you to get to the fucking point? Like, I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah. Wow. It was that. Anyway,
what were you?
Well,
I want to hear the end of it.
I don't know that we have time for such
a pattern. What was the pattern?
The pattern is just that, like, people don't really, they're not accustomed to seeing me as a human in front of them.
Yeah.
So there isn't really the habit of it's more of like an objectified kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. So there is still this idea to be like, they'll comment as though I'm not there.
I understand.
And they'll be like, let's take a picture. And you know, just sort of like there's this relationship. And you know, again, like I've actually experienced it enough to understand better, more or less, why it's happening. So I certainly don't take it personally and can't judge them personally. But it's not like an interaction. It's more like a comment section. It's kind of, and that's not, that's not normal either.
Yeah, you know? Totally. Yeah.
What
about you?
Normal? You're very famous. Have you experienced anything like that?
For a decade.
Not quite two, but it's...
Not two, but it's half.
You weren't able to wear the t-shirts.
It's half.
While you were...
I have lots of t-shirts now with my face on them. Also, why are we doing this? I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Because it's an audit. It's an experience for the listener.
Okay, I get it. I have to say, the things I get... People do not come up to me and say, I relate to your experience of like people will dehumanize me a little bit and not say hello or not ask permission for things, just kind of jump in my face, which I get. They're excited and it's cool. But in terms of like the mean comments I get, no. And so I always remind myself that it really does exist on your phone. And the second you put it away, it actually doesn't exist at all.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
really
that's
healthy.
Important.
It doesn't exist at all.
That's healthy, Lily.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling me healthy. That was like the best compliment. Forget your compliment about me looking good.
Yeah, really, it's only superficial.
Yeah, you gave me a superficial, you look good. Ask that. She said I'm healthy. That's what I want to hear. That no one has ever called me healthy. That is just, wow. I got called healthy today.
Yeah.
Can't wait to tell my 7 therapists.
Tell your sister. Call your sister.
Oh my God. Yeah. I can't wait.
You think you're so good with your sick, baptized husband.
I'm healthy. These complete strangers that talk to me for 2 minutes. So
must be true.
And we'll be right back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Lily, I have heard you talk about how growing up in your household, excellence was sort of the baseline. Mm-hmm. That was what was expected of you, and your parents would be proud of you, but it was like, okay, moving on. Like, right. that's what we expected. And that to this day, part of your motivation is to make them proud. Mm-hmm. I wonder, it's like a two-part question. Does that still ring true for you? What do you think makes your parents proud? And also, what was school like for you, right, given that context?
On to the first part, which is, do I still try to make my parents proud? I am confident that when I'm in my casket, I'm going to be thinking, I hope they like this casket. I hope they agree with the colors in this casket and my choices here. Yeah.
So you do believe in the afterlife, is what you're saying.
Don't go down this path. Yes, I think, you know, I have something called immigrant hustle. You know, I think my parents didn't make an active choice one day being like, we want excellence from our kids, is they were forced to be excellent to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, they immigrated from India. I think my dad immigrated in 1972, had to work a million jobs, a classic immigrant story, but like, they were focused on making sure they can make it, that they could provide. Mm-hmm. And that takes a certain level of resilience and striving for excellence. And so it comes from a place of just wanting us to be okay. But yes, I think I really do have that embedded in me. At risk of sounding like I have an ego, I'm an extremely hard worker. Like, yeah, I really struggle to find people that can work as long and as hard as I do, because I really do have something that I've gotten from my parents that's just like, you got to do it. You got to get up. I don't have that. I'll give you a small, small example. When I used to live with my parents, anytime my dad would have to drop me to the airport, okay, it doesn't matter what time I would wake him up. Like, he has to drop me at 3 a.m, 2 a.m. I just like, hey, dad. And he would get up out of bed right away. And he would, in 2 minutes, be ready to drop me. And I noticed that there was no gray area of time where he had to, like, wake up a little bit and he had to convince himself that this was important. Like, that little grit that you need. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way I can describe myself. If I have a task ahead of me and I'm like, this is a really hard task, there isn't that 2 hours where I'm like, oh my God, I just will get up and do
that
thing.
That's amazing, Lily.
And I think I get that from my dad. And it comes from like this, perhaps not always healthy habit of like knowing that it needs to get done and there's not a choice. And if you don't do it, someone else will do it. Mm-hmm. And so like that is embedded into everything I do, definitely. Wow. So I always try to make my parents happy. I'm trying to do that more healthier these days because I'm such a healthy person, as we've established.
Make healthy choices.
I mean, it's being called into question.
Yeah. I'm sure the listeners are like, are you though? Are you healthy?
But you look great.
Amazing.
Exactly. Amazing.
So that's my fallback. That's a compliment I fall back on. Yeah. Exactly. In terms of what school was like, do you mean like elementary school, high school?
Middle school.
Middle school. Okay, so.
Topic of the show.
Yeah. Middle school, of course. To explain that to me as someone who's a Canadian now, what grade is that?
Yeah, right. It's
11
I mean,
to 14.
The ages of 11 to 14, 15.
Right. So yes, that for me was like 7, 8 and going into high school a little bit. Really figuring myself out and not knowing where to go. So like, a lot of people ask me when I came out, like, did you know you were queer forever? I think if you look at pictures of me from back in the day, you might joke and be like, huh, really? I really did not only came out to myself truly when I was 30 years old. Mm-hmm. 30 years old was the first time I told myself, I think I am queer. Mm-hmm. And no one believes that because they're like, really? But you liked wrestling? I'm like, those are all stereotypes.
But you liked wrestling.
And you liked wrestling.
Don't you think the wrestling?
I know. Exactly. But like, all those stereotypes aside, if I look back at that, it was really me just constantly trying to figure myself out. Like, where do I fit? Mm-hmm. Am I Indian enough? Am I being a good Indian? Am I not? Are my parents proud of me? Am I too girly? Am I not girly enough? What should I wear? Like, every day I remember getting ready for school and being like, like, I would have these conversations with myself. Like, I guess I wore this, like, I wore baggy clothes for a lot of the days. I guess today I'll wear, like, tighter pants today. Just, like, just so I can feel like I know what I'm doing a little bit. But that was what school was like for me. But I also will say, school is where I learned that I loved entertainment. One of the biggest things in my life in middle school, and this was, like, the make or break, y'all, it's about to get real, was the talent show. International Light Talent Show was my life. I was like, my performance is going to set me up for the rest of my life. I was a dancer, but I took so seriously. Wow. Like, it was beyond serious how much I took that.
What kind of dancing did you do?
Bhangra dancing, like Punjabi dancing. I'm a trained Bhangra dancer.
That's amazing.
And so I was known in my school as, like, being the dancer girl. And I just, like, took it way. That's another thread of mine. I take things. I can't do anything casually.
Yeah. Commit. That's pretty clear.
I can't. Yeah, you're like, we get it.
No, not just here. In all of your content.
Everything. It's just like I have to do it to the upteenth degree or else I just can't do it.
Yeah.
do you find time to relax? How do you do that?
Question. This is a great question, because now I'm going to prove I am healthy right now. So for a lot of my career, from like 2010, when I started making YouTube videos, to like 2016, 17-ish, I will admit that I probably had very little work-life balance. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start as our digital creator, there's no boss, there's no hours, no punching in, there's no punching out. It's as hard as you are going to work as how you're going to see the results, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would stay up into ridiculous hours of the night editing, or spend days and days in a row sitting at a desk. I can't necessarily say, and this is going to be an unpopular thing I perhaps say, I can't necessarily say I regret that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I do not believe I would be where I am right now if I didn't do that. Yeah. And I do think there's a certain age where you like have to have that grit, and you're starting something, you're trying to climb a ladder. Now my version of work-life balance is as such. It's in seasons. I think it's a delusion to believe that you can have that every day. And I think that's how we're encouraged to think about it every day. Like, if you work this, you got to do this after work and X, Y. In my industry, that's just not
possible. It's not possible.
It's
in
not
this industry
possible
at all. Exactly. Actually. You have to. It is seasons.
Exactly.
You're right.
Yeah. It's not. And I think people have kind of judged me to be unhealthy because I'm like, oh no, I'm shooting and I cannot hang out with you for the next 3 months because I will do nothing else. And people that are not in the industry will be like, that sounds really unhealthy. But I'm like, no, because after that, I'm going to go on a very long vacation where I do nothing. Mm-hmm. And we're forced into that schedule. It's not possible to the whole, I'm going to wrap set, go home, meditate, yada, yada. I do try to meditate every morning and I still do that, but
yeah,
you can't have that.
That's not
level
a balance though. That's clinging on to the bare minimum. Yeah. Trust me. Do that every day.
Yes.
It's not,
right.
I'm not okay.
I never said I was okay.
I am okay.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I get the bare minimum of meditation and prayer every day, you know, with the extreme schedule that will come. But
yeah,
I'm not like thriving because
absolutely
of it.
Not. Right.
I'm hanging on.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. But I think it's in seasons. You know, I accept that. Like, for example, I'm on a press run right now. I've had a very, very tiring day, except for this, because this is awesome.
Yeah.
Sure.
But
well,
no,
that
just
sounds like that's the energy drink.
I was like, it's still pretty full. It's still pretty full.
Sometimes all you need is that first sip, I
find. Why are you twitching,
Lily? It's 90% placebo, let's be real. It's almost all placebo. But yeah, you know, sales and seasons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lily, we have a couple questions we ask every guest.
Please.
Can you share an embarrassing story from your tween years?
Ooh, from my tween years. How embarrassing are we going here? There's so
as
many
embarrassing
directions
as you're willing to get.
I mean, okay, I'll tell you about a time that I was like, when I think about it, I want to die inside.
Oh yes.
You're like, yes, yeah, let's relive that trauma.
Like, are we recording? Is everything
okay? And I really hope these people are not listening to the podcast.
They're probably not.
Name them. Name them.
No.
Surname.
We'll find out. We'll check.
I was hanging out with it was my, I think, ex boyfriend at the time, actually, and a bunch of his friends. And, okay, of course, there's a group of dudes again. And I was hanging out. I dropped by to say they were playing a bunch of games. And he was trying to get me to stay longer. And I was like, I don't want to stay longer. I have other things to do. And I don't want to hang with my ex right now. Like, it was like a weird thing. So anyways, the configuration was I was standing at the table. And they were all sitting on the floor around the table. And he was trying to get me to stay. And I said no. And so he yanked at me and yanked my pants.
Oh, no.
And they completely came down.
Aww.
Including underwear.
No.
Including underwear.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
Sorry.
Luckily, my shirt was long, but I'm pretty sure.
Along the Rock Johnson shirt.
I'm pretty sure they saw some butthole.
Oh, my goodness.
Lily, that it feels like at that age, that could be traumatizing.
It was.
How did
I
you
think
feel?
They saw some butthole.
Please say butthole again.
And you know what? And then I went home. And then I went home, and I looked in the mirror, and I like redid the configuration.
Just see what they could see.
And I pulled down my pants to be like, what did they see? At what angle did they see? How much butthole did they see?
No.
Did they see pubes? Like, I wanted to know.
Yeah.
I wanted to know. So I had to keep reliving it over and over again just to like, you know, look at them. They're laughing over there behind the glass. Like,
well,
it was
I saw
the whole
first
thing.
They were like, oh.
Yeah. He felt so bad about it.
Of course he
did. And you know what I will say at that age, you know what I really respected? I saw, because I turned around quickly and I pulled him up, but I saw actually him be, to like to his friends, like,
actually,
and I was like,
yeah,
are we gonna get back together right now?
And he's like, well, not after that. No.
But I remember being mortified.
Am I falling in love with you?
No, that's mortifying.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. That's
did you have a hard time making eye contact with them in the days after?
I had a hard time. I left like 1 minute later. I was like, I'm out of here. I need to go home and do this again in the mirror 50 times. Yes, absolutely.
That's amazing. You crushed it. Okay, other classic question. Can you tell us about your first love and heartbreak, whatever age that happened?
Ooh, besides The Rock, right? We're not talking about because that was my first love and my first heartbreak because now we're actually friends and he texted me once and he said, and I quote, "Hey, sis." I was like, "No! No!" It was the worst day of my life. It was the worst day of my life. I'm sweating. My first love, yes, okay. In elementary school, so I think in grade like 6 maybe. Oh my God, my parents are going to find out about this for the first time. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Dad. I had a boyfriend. Ah! And this goes back to what I was talking about earlier. How as a kid, you're encouraged to like think way beyond your years. And I remember being so stressed, and I was like, what, 12? Being so stressed one day because I was like, oh my God, like, I really love my boyfriend. What if his parents don't accept me when we get married? Like, that's what I was stressed for. I was like, what if his parents don't accept me when we get married? Like, how can I make his... And I was like, what a deranged thought to have at 12 years old.
Yeah.
And so that was my first heartbreak, and why we broke up was because we had a fight because he got jealous of me saying... I think B2K was sexy. You know B2K, the group?
Yeah, I remember the group. I'm trying to remember.
Omarion.
That's right.
And I was like,
that's
oh my God, Omarion's so sexy. Yeah. And he got really mad. And we got in a fight and we broke up.
Wow.
Oh.
That's...
Guys, I chose Omarion, if you're listening.
Well, he was also undeniably sexy. He was just
thank you.
Like,
I feel like certain people, you have to be like, you're correct.
It's true. Yeah.
You're correct. Well, like I can't be dating that type of jealous energy anymore.
Yeah,
it can't happen. Yeah. It can't happen. Yeah, for B2K, I'll never forget it.
I remember at that age, as a young boy, like you know, blossoming, all those things. It's like the idea, you know, that kind of fragile masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason it's there is because, I mean. I could go on a whole thing right now.
I'm
going to
add some context,
and
I'm not saying it's correlated. I'm not saying it's correlated.
Sure.
But I was taller than him. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I'm saying.
So, no, and it, I mean, look.
By a lot.
Yeah. Well, so, there we go.
I was a taller girlfriend that liked Omarion. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, intimidating.
Wasn't he quite short?
Omarion?
Yeah.
But I was 12. Yeah.
That's right. He would have been taller than her.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
and
it's
I
not
don't
like
know
this
if he's short, and it doesn't matter because he's Omarion.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter.
Shout out to Short Kings.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's like a season one throwback. We had a running joke on here about Short Kings.
Okay. About how Penn is a Short King.
Are you a Short King? How tall are you?
I don't want to go into this because no matter what I say, I mean, I am undeniably 5'10".
Okay. That's not short.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything else.
Be great.
I cannot win on this one.
Okay.
If I say it is or it isn't, there's factions.
Yeah.
There's
groups who think different things.
I take my shoes off.
It doesn't even matter.
5'10".
If I say Omarion is sexy, are you offended?
No.
That doesn't matter how tall you are. But it doesn't matter how tall you are.
Exactly.
Because you're secure.
It's a less scientific statement than me being 5'10", but yes, you're right. Yes, we'll take both as objective truths, and we shall move on.
Lily, I think we want to get into your career also. And I'm just curious, why did you get on YouTube, and how did it feel when you started blowing up? Like, how quickly did that happen, and how did it affect you?
I started on YouTube. So I was, like, pretty late on YouTube compared to my friends. A lot of my friends was like, there's this website, it's called YouTube. And I was like, sounds stupid.
Little did you know.
I know. It was in my last year of university, actually. Mm. And I was, like I said, I was a very creative kid that loved
entertainment.
What were
you studying?
Psychology. I have a psychology degree, which I use.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Literally every day. But I loved entertainment. But, you know, you're growing up and you're a kid in Toronto. Yeah. You don't really know what that means as a career. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no casting agents. There's no, like, that world doesn't exist in Toronto. So I was just like, that's just what I like. I love entertainment, but that's never going to be my career. Mm-hmm. YouTube came around and I was like, oh, wait. People are just doing what they want to do and making videos. They're making comedy in their bedrooms. They're, like, talking about their thoughts. That's really cool. That's never existed before. So I posted my first YouTube video in 2010, thinking nothing of it. It was actually a spoken word piece about religion.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Oh. It's not up anymore for the reasons we discussed. But my second video was, like, a tutorial. And I was just playing around with different things. And I did my first comedy video. And I remember falling in love being like, oh, this is cool. I get to, like, talk about things that I think are funny and that I've never seen someone else that looks like me talk about. That was a big thing. I don't think before that I ever heard another South Asian woman talking about, like, relationship drama or, like, having issues with her parents or anything like that. So I was filling a void that I myself felt. Obviously, I thought it would go nowhere at all because I called myself Superwoman. Because I'm a stupid, stupid business person at that age.
Like, that was your YouTube
name?
That
was my YouTube name. And I got really scared as my career progressed and I got more success. When you would Google Superwoman, I would show up before the DC character. And I was like,
seriously?
They're going to sue you. Damn. I was like, they're going to sue me. So I actually got my lawyer at the time to proactively reach out to them to be like, she didn't know. She's going to wean off it. So we came up with like a plan that I would lean off it to like contractually do that. But they were very kind for not coming at me being like, you owe us $100 million.
That's nice.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of when did I know I was successful, I was like the last person to know, honestly. Really? I feel like I have a little bit of imposter syndrome here. Mm. Even when I hit 1 million subscribers, I was like, it's a fluke. It's a fluke. It can't be real.
They did it by accident.
It can't be real.
Wow.
The first time I really, really felt it was when I performed for the first time in India. Because, you know, I had visited India as a kid, visiting my family in Punjab, and I never thought I would go there for professional reasons. And when I went to India, you know what I mean? We know the World Wide Web is worldwide, but it's really hard to believe it until you see it. So when I was in India, I was in Bombay, and the entire audience was like reciting my catchphrases to me. And I was like, what?
Aww.
I connect with all of you across the world. That's
amazing.
Wild. Yeah. And then some like Bollywood stars that I grew up adoring came to meet me and their kids were fans. And I was like this. I remember like throwing up in my mouth. Being like, this is ridiculously cool. And that was the one moment where I remember being unable to compute what was happening because I was just so overwhelmed.
Stick around. We'll be right back.
Lily, in your TED Talk last year, where you talk about sort of being a woman in the entertainment industry and the like obstacles that you faced, you shared many, many gems. But you said that investment means valuing potential over proof.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go into that a little bit
more? Please. Also, can I just say, I love how prepared you all are. You, except for you. You don't look like you have anything. You have something over there. You have an iPad.
He's on TikTok, right?
I actually, you know the reason I use this? Yeah, that's true. I'm just swiping.
Scrolling.
Just so prepared. Seriously, what great questions. Thank you. Yes. So I was talking about late night, you know, in my TED Talk and talking about how I had two seasons of a late night show and it was probably the most challenging thing I've ever done in my life because I got thrown into this boys club where they're all white men. And I think the assumption that I had and everyone else had was, this is going to change things. Like she's, and I'm not saying it didn't, but she's going to come and now things are going to change and the culture's going to change.
Can I just say for context for our listeners, Lily is the first female late night host in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So historic.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that.
And you were given, I just want to say, as a person who works in the industry, your production schedule, which you cite in your TED Talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know just internally, when I heard that, I was like, what? Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The number of episodes you had to complete in the
96 episodes in 3 months.
That's insane.
Right.
Yes.
Insane. I mean, so anyway, I don't want to
add fuel to the fire, please.
Which ended
like
up being like 2 to 3 a day,
yes.
You said.
Two or three a day.
Insane.
Wow. And you know, the magic of late night is that it's timely also, right? That it can
of
speak
course.
About what's happening to the times. But my first season of the late night show, then this is the first season, the first impression. Mm-hmm. You're already trying to iron out the kinks, trying to make it all work. My first season of my late night show, for the majority of its airing, was not addressing the pandemic.
That's
so just
crazy.
Also take that in that the world
which may
went through,
have been a blessing.
A blessing,
weirdly.
But also
I mean,
not.
It was a curse in terms of your production schedule.
It
but.
Was a curse, no, but because nothing was relatable.
No, it made it seem like she was talking about things that weren't relevant.
Yeah.
All the
other
late night
so
hosts
like,
were commenting
exactly.
on
so
it.
So everyone was just like, why do you have a live audience? Why are you talking about traveling? Why are you talking about parties?
Because there's a pandemic going on. Yeah, you know,
we're
still... The pandemic has now been so long that it's actually kind of... Because, you know, like the latter half of the pandemic, everybody was like, I do not want to see any pandemic content.
Yeah, exactly. But this was like right is, when the pandemic was happening.
Yeah, fair.
And what I meant by that, read it one more time for me. What did I say?
You said...
Just like
investment means valuing potential over proof.
Right. So I feel like when it comes to opportunity, and there's science to back this up, there's stats to back this up, that white men are more likely to be hired based on their potential. You know, like, oh, I know he can crush it. Like, we've seen many people like him before, crush it before. Like, we believe in him. We don't really need much to be convinced of this. We're going to give you a time slot. That's good. We're going to give you a bunch of money. That's good.
Mm.
When you're introducing someone new or someone that's different or someone the audience is not used to and you're trying to change culture and do something good, you start measuring people by their proof. Can you prove to me you deserve a time slot that's better? Can you prove that the audience is going to like you? Can you prove that you deserve more writers and more of a budget? Yeah. Whereas like someone else is not held to that standard. So that's what I mean by potential over proof. And that's a really hard thing to do because you're trying to change culture here.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that in a 1:30 a.m. time slot with a fraction of the writers and a fraction of the budget because you're trying to get an entire audience used to something else. That requires an investment of time and money.
Yeah.
And so I really encourage anyone, any company, any studio that's trying to do that. It's not just about putting them on a poster.
Yeah.
It's not about giving them a season or two. It's about being like, hey, this might take 5 to 10 years. Because which show gets, I mean, Penn, you tell me, which show gets figured out in a season or two? No. Which unscripted late night show that has 96 episodes?
Especially late night.
It's something, how can you figure out a voice? How can you figure out a flow with writers? How can you figure out any of that in that amount of time?
Mm-hmm. You know, something else you said in that TED Talk, you talked about sort of the premise was like a seat at the table is not enough. We have to like build a new table.
Right.
And in that metaphor, you talked about if you're sitting on a wobbly seat, you can't show up to the table as your full self. I thought that was so profound because I do think there are also situations where it's like, look, we gave this group, this population an opportunity and they're not crushing it the way that other people do. Mm-hmm. But it's like, but what is everything leading up to that moment where they are actually finally allowed?
Yeah. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy because it's like, well, you need to prove that you can get a better time slot. But how am I going to prove that at a 1:30 a.m. time slot?
Right.
Yeah.
And even forget the time slot because like...
Yeah, it's more than that.
I had like half of the writers... And I'm not trying to have this whole rant about complaining. I'm just genuinely trying to encourage people to think about this in a way where it's like all the resources that go into that stuff, like, you got to set people up for success.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if you don't, you can't be shocked if they don't succeed.
Right. No, totally.
Yeah. 1 + 1 does not equal 3. This is easy math here.
Yeah. Okay, one other thing you said in that talk.
Yeah.
You were talking about something where it's like, oh, it doesn't really add up, and there wasn't necessarily an obvious gatekeeper in that situation. And then you said, well, because there's actually an invisible gatekeeper called culture.
Exactly.
Do you remember the context?
Yes. With YouTube, there was no you can say, objectively, there's not many gatekeepers. No, there's no casting agent. Anyone can make YouTube videos. Of course, if you go higher up, you could say, oh, there's a CEO. Sure. On YouTube, or even in moments when I'm not doing something with a gatekeeper, I've learned that it's still there's still a lot of obstacles women face because ultimately the massive gatekeeper is culture.
Of course.
It's a culture of how we treat women, right? How women are treated, how we the opportunities we think they deserve.
Yeah.
That has been a really hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Because yes, I can give you a list of obstacles that exist in the late night show because of money and a person that made a decision, but I can give you a list of examples also where it was just a bunch of people watching the show being like, we don't care about your perspective on this.
Mm.
We don't care about what you have to say about this.
Yeah.
We don't want you to talk about being a woman. Like that was a lot of feedback. Like, we don't care that you're a woman. Stop talking about being a woman. And it would get so in my head to the point where like, I remember towards the end of the first season, I would like physically on a pen and paper be like, how many times did I mention being a woman? Like how many times did I mention being brown? Like I need to reduce that. It would get so in my head because people were like, stop talking. And the thing is, no one's telling like Jimmy and Seth, who I love, no one's being like, stop talking about being a white dude.
Yeah.
Because that's so part of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about being straight naturally. It's who they are. But the second I started to be like, oh, so I went and did it with a girl or I did this, like, stop it. We get it. And I'm like, oh, but I'm just trying to talk about me.
Yeah.
So that would really mess with me because ultimately the culture is gatekeeper. The biggest gatekeeper is culture.
Yeah. And the hardest one to change.
Totally. Yeah. That's actually what I'm most nerdy about is what you just talked about.
Yeah.
My entire fund, Unicorn Island Fund, is about that, changing the culture of what it means to be a woman.
Yeah.
Because in South Asian culture and so many around the world, it's not an issue you can just throw money at. It is changing people's minds and showing them that there's actually benefit to giving women opportunity.
So just while we're on the topic of the late night show, you said earlier that like excellence is really important to you, sort of achieving at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it was a failure. It wasn't your failure, but did you feel like a failure when the show didn't get renewed? Like how hard was that for you?
Yeah, so I honestly do not view that show like a failure at all. And this is not me trying to front because I'm a PR talking point or anything. Like it's actually done great things for my career and has opened a lot of doors for me. But did I, when it didn't, the truth is when it didn't get renewed, one of my friends said this to me and I was like, oh my goodness, you're absolutely right. She said, the universe is doing for you what you will not do yourself. Because I think a lot of people saw that show killing me, like killing me. And I would have kept doing it and being tortured just because I felt a responsibility because it was so historic. I would have probably done it for 20 years if they let me and just tortured myself for 20 years. And the universe was like, no. You're going to go on to do other things. We're not going to let this happen. And didn't get renewed. I don't feel like a failure. I will tell you that one of the hardest feelings during the late night show, and maybe you guys can relate to this, is as someone who does like excellence, it's really hard to be in late night because late night is not about excellence. Mm. Late night is about getting it done. Mm. That was said to me very often. It is about quantity, not quality. We have a deadline to meet today. We have to get the show. So more often than not, I would be walking to my mark, going over the monologue, and I remember saying this to my head of development at the time, saying, this is not funny. Mm. I don't like what I'm about to go say, and I don't think it's good.
As you're walking over to do
But I am now going to go deliver it as if I think it's amazing. Oh. That's very tough as an artist. Yeah. And I'm not saying this because my writers were bad. It's just they were overworked to death.
Yeah.
They were overworked to death. They had the same number of episodes to accomplish, but there was so little of them.
Yeah.
And they were so overworked, and so no one was really set up for success.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a hard pill to swallow. As a performer, I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah, like, I mean, well, television as an infrastructure is just, I mean, I don't want to bore our listeners with like a bunch of, I don't know, like business talk, but it is hard because, you know, when you have that number of episodes, what you're working with is giant amounts of money, even for the lowest budget show. You're working with tens of millions of dollars, you know, at some point, like if you've got a lot of episodes.
Let me ask you a question. You know about the entertainment industry. You know a little something,
he
right?
He just got so nervous.
96 just out of curiosity. 96 episodes in season one. What do you think the budget was?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
let's
just
see.
Guess. Mm. And I think I know, I don't even know factually. I'm pretty sure I know what it was, but the internet has 96 episodes. So, what do you think the budget was?
Think of a reasonable budget.
Yeah,
not knowing,
so, of course.
Including me as well.
Yeah, is it was it less than 10 million?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Will you tell us? For the whole season?
Mm-hmm. For the whole season.
Lily, that's crazy.
So, was it less than 5?
No. That's impossible.
Okay,
that's impossible.
So I'm just...
It was a little less than 10.
The reason that I wanted to walk people through
crazy.
That... But hold
that's
on.
Crazy.
The reason I wanted to walk people through that is because to the average listener,
like,
hearing
so
the number
money,
$10 million being like, oh, you couldn't make a show for $10 million? It's like, no. The amount of work that is required for the number of people... Actually, that's like so little. And
that is regulated by a union also.
And,
so there's no cutting corners.
And so this is why I was trying to be like, this is a hard thing to answer quickly to me.
Well, in comparison, it's like no other late night show is getting made for less than $10 million.
Right. Yeah.
Not even close to
Not
that.
Even
Not even remotely close to that. Right? Right. So you have to compare it to that. Because I agree, $10 million sounds like so much money. But you look at 100 people every day for that many months.
But $10 million doesn't sound like anything to me for 96 episodes.
But
the
that's
budget,
because you've been,
I know, but still.
So
the
you might be listening
to
just being like, what a douchebag. Hopefully you hear my context. If not, then tell me to go F off and I'll be fine with that too.
We're cutting all this.
We might cut this section.
Okay.
But no, that's crazy. So you you use your platform to advocate for social justice issues.
Yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think that comedians should not be weighing in on politics, should not be trying to teach people lessons.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that?
I think that's dumb. I think that's dumb.
In a word.
I think that here's what I'll tell you. I do not think people should insert their two cents into conversations without doing a little bit of research into them. I do agree with that. I do think we live in this world where everyone is entitled to their opinion, sure, but I do think that opinions they're not facts. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be massive confusion between facts and opinions.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to the late night show for this because I used to get a lot of criticism from people that have no idea what it's like to shoot a late night show, sitting in their mom's basement being like, why isn't your show like this? Why doesn't it do this? And I'm like, well, there's actually 10 logical reasons it's not like that, because there's a union, because there's laws, because there's rules, because we have to make the episode this exact amount. There's so many reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If Jimmy Fallon were to call me and give me critique, I would be like, let me get my pen and paper.
Right.
Let me listen to everything you have to say, because you actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I think that I would agree that if people are just saying things for the sake of being like sensational and trying to be part of a conversation, but they're not actually adding a point of view or knowledge, I do agree that we don't need more noise in the world.
Yeah.
But like, for example, me as a comedian talking about women's issues and talking about gender equality, I can back that the F up with any bit of knowledge, and I feel completely comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if someone has a problem with that, I don't care.
Yeah, I love that.
It's like the equivalent of like we're sitting at home watching a basketball game. You're like, you idiot! Yeah. You're gonna get that 3-pointer, so dumb. Like, it's like that.
As a person who's just getting into like sports that are popular here. I've been getting into basketball the last couple seasons. So I watch with my stepson and his friends and some other. And I do think it's kind of amazing how entitled fans feel to being like, oh, come on, get this. It's like,
you could never do that.
Not in a million years could anybody sitting in those seats.
Yes.
And I just think it's like, it's kind of amazing how the fans talk about the players like they own them in a way. It's like, it's just a bit foreign to
me. So again, I know this can be a little controversial about the like, but everyone should have a voice. I agree. But not everyone's opinion has to hold weight in every subject, in my opinion. Or where would we go? Where would we be if we listened to everything about everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd be in it.
We'd be here.
I know we're saying a hot take, but we can maybe cut this. We'd be in a world where people like don't take vaccines because a celebrity says it causes autism.
Right.
Like someone who doesn't know anything about vaccine effects.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know? I just feel like you gotta... Your opinion. You need to... If you want to have an opinion, for the love of God, like know something about it. Yeah. Know something about what you're talking about. Yeah. Add something of value, you know?
There's so much media saturation, and we have like celebrity saturation. Mm. Culture is becoming more and more online. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's a space where like the only way that every person can interact is in this way. So I'm thinking about how entitled they should be to being there as well. Because again, like you think about the pandemic, how online culture was, it's like, well, so people with platforms are just given influence in the culture, and then people who don't, and then, you know, if something goes viral, so that's the equalizer, whatever. But you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it is this really weird and like tough and nuanced soupy mess where like, I tried to boil it down to the spiritual impulse that everybody's having when they want to talk out of the side of their neck and comment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know...
Can I tell you what my spiritual take on this is?
Because sure.
I, you know, with my very healthy work-life balance of meditating every morning for 20 minutes. So I have had to come to terms with a lot of the comments and stuff. Like, that has been one of the hardest parts of my career, is like the constant feedback on every single thing I do. Mm. It is people who have never met me telling me who I am. Like, that's a very hard pill to swallow. Yeah. Because people will tell you with such certainty who you are, even though they've never met you. I say something during my meditation, which is, I am everyone and everyone is me, and we are in different circumstances. Like, I do really believe that. I really do believe that a person can hate me, but I am exactly like them and they are exactly like me, and we have different buttons and we have different circumstances, and that's why we're having this interaction. So it actually has nothing to do with the other person. Like, I know that. Like, everyone's just showing their trauma. And everyone's just saying things because they're having an experience. And I think, honestly, what it is, if we want to get really, like, deep, it's that there's just this the world is going through a hard time where people are just also not as happy. People are struggling. True. Times are really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I also understand that when people write comments to me, like, yeah, they may not like me, sure, but it's also coming from a place of, like, just general frustration with life. And, you know, so I always remind myself that people are just showing their trauma.
Yeah.
And I know that because when I get really heated about like gender stuff, I'm like, I am showing my trauma. Yeah, I'm doing the exact same thing.
That's what I thought when I saw the TED Talk. I thought she's just like, letting her trauma.
She's just friggin'.
Just, I was about to comment.
Yeah, good.
I was about to comment.
Yeah.
I was just like, ugh, another woman with a platform.
Can I just tell you also, on the TED Talk, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but I have to just emphasize. So I don't know if you know this, but everyone who's ever done a TED Talk, I don't think this is the case for TEDx, but a TED Talk, you know, it's completely memorized.
Oh,
there's no prompter.
Wow.
Every stat is memorized. Everything
That's
is memorized.
Lot.
So me being, you know, striving for excellence, I was like, not only will my TED Talk be 19 minutes, but I'm going to have props. I'm going to do the clicker myself. Mm-hmm. And no one knows this because it's not in the actual edit because they edit out mistakes, but I did make a mistake. Mm. I forgot an entire slide and this is how I handled it. Are you ready? I looked at the slide and I was like, I completely forgot that, so I'm going to rewind. And then I physically rewound myself. I went on the TED Talk stage.
How did it fly? Did they like it?
And everyone loved it. And I was like, that's how I'm handling this. Yeah. This very professional stage, that is how I'm choosing
to handle
this.
That's like a Robin Williams moment.
That's really great.
He has like a famous, if you, he actually did this. You know, his like brilliant zinger mind. There's some, I've seen him rewind himself. So you and Robin Williams.
Can I also say, although he made a joke about, you know, commenting, I was in the room when he was watching your TED Talk, and he kept saying, oh, Lily. Like, he was, like, really having a reaction to
it. But to be clear, not in, like, a... not that what you were doing was this, but like, I don't want that to be misconstrued as condescending. I was moved
no,
and I was laughing.
Was
and I think at one point I went, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. That really means a lot to me. At some of the injustices you were like, he was like,
I mean, it was powerful stuff.
Are we going to be friends?
Like, I hope so. I mean, we're like, right here having a friendship.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot to me because, you know, I won't go on a tangent on this because I know I can be a nerd about this, but like, that's the recipe right there. That's the key. It's men also caring and like, they're very much so part of the recipe when it comes to gender equality.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And men would benefit greatly from it as well.
There are so many men who do understand that. Mm-hmm. Like, so many.
Totally, yeah.
I hope that, like, we do have a surprisingly predominantly female listenership.
Yes.
It's like as well as a guest roster. No, it's not anymore, right?
It's 80%.
It's gone down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got a 20%. Shout out to the 20% out there.
What's up? I love that.
But speaking to the 80% who sometimes, like, might understandably believe that men are trash, or the 20% self-hating who think that men are trash, understandably, sometimes. There are so many men out there who do understand.
You're absolutely
correct. I feel like sometimes it's we need to speak to each other where we're encouraging each other and really believing in each other.
Exactly.
And not, you know,
I was going to say, because there are so many men, and as I've done this work, there's so many men that are so about the cause and so awesome, yourself included, I can already tell. But, like, if I could encourage any of those 20%, like, if you haven't made that loud yet, make that loud.
Yeah.
Because the people that are not like that are very loud.
We are asking more men to speak up. You heard it here on Pod Crush.
Boom.
Get your voices out there, men.
Gender equality, baby. Grow
your 20%.
Let's go.
No, but I do want to say it's true because I think more men do feel that way, but I used to work at the UN and my primary research area was the advancement of gender equality and like the dynamics of community work.
Okay, way to show me up. You're like, yeah,
you're
saying is really cute. Basically, she's like super cute. Your TED Talk, I worked at the UN, the United Nations.
Exactly.
So simmer down over there.
Shame you. Yeah. So I would go to all of these gender equality events and there was I don't think there were ever more than 3 men in the room. And that could have been a room of 100 or a room of 20. Mm-hmm. And it was it was like people that I knew. It's like the men didn't show up. Like they just didn't think that the space was for them, whether or not they believed in equality.
So now.
And they need to show up.
Let me invite everyone telling you the space is for you.
Yeah.
And here's your invitation. Would have been cooler if I didn't stutter, but whatever.
Do it again.
Sorry.
Do it again.
Okay, fine. So this is. So let this be my invitation to all men listening. You are invited to fight for this cause. Welcome. Welcome.
To Lily's prop table.
Yes.
Before we wrap, what projects are you currently working on? What are you excited about?
It's an exciting time. A lot of cool things have happened. Recently, The Muppets Mayhem premiered on Disney+. Mm-hmm. It is cool, not only because it's The Muppets, but it actually is my first lead in anything.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
Yes, I'm the lead human. I'm the lead human. I play Nora, who's the music exec trying to help the Electric Mayhem create their first album. And it was the most fun, best thing I've ever done in my life.
Aww.
Especially, we just talked about, you know, coming from late night, which was quantity over quality. This was so quality, like no corners were cut at all. They reshot some scenes, and you know this, they reshot some scenes 3 times on 3 separate days.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, we want to get this right.
That's great. Wow.
It was amazing. Awesome. It was one of the coolest things. Otherwise, I'm a judge on Canada's Got Talent, which is cool. Apparently, I get to tell people if they're talented or not. It's so much fun.
Your opinion is not trash.
I know. Maybe I have what it takes to back it up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my Unicorn Island production stuff. I have a gang of my own productions I'm working on, and then I have the fund associated with that. Can I tell one more quick story?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Because this actually connects to something we were talking about. You had asked me if I still want to make my parents proud and if I've outgrown that or if that's a thing. Mm-hmm. A funny story. So I am working on a movie that I'm going to shoot this summer. It is in India. It is independently financed.
Wow.
The log line is a 30-year-old virgin finds herself teaching sex ed in high school. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm playing this character.
That.
I'm also one of the writers on the movie. So I was working on the script the other day and it's like raunchy. Like we're going full R-rated raunchy here. I think it's important like for me to be a South Asian lead and to get raunchy. Like we want to go there, right? So I'm writing this movie. It's super raunchy. And in the 11th hour, I just stopped. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I FaceTimed my mom. And I was like, Mom, I recognize I'm 34 years old. But I want to ask, am I allowed to do this movie that I've written and that I will act in? And then we had a whole conversation. She's like, well, what's in the movie? And then I had to awkwardly tell her. I was like, I was like, Mom, there's a vibrator scene. I just need you to know that. I need to tell you. And you need to understand that prior to this moment, me and my mom have never, ever discussed anything remotely sexual.
Oh my God.
I've never seen my parents kiss. This is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like, nothing. So this was a very uncomfortable situation. And then she returned the question and said, have you ever used a vibrator? I'm like, what is happening? What is happening? I hate this conversation. But we went through the whole movie. And then she ended the conversation saying, I can't believe we just had this conversation for the first time. And I was like, that's why this movie's important. That is literally why this movie's important. So, yes, I still try to make my parents proud, but my parents rise to the occasion. That's one of the projects I'm working on that I'm really excited about.
That's cool. Yeah.
If you could go back to 12-year-old Lily, what would you say? Or what would you do?
Okay. This is going to get real deep for a second.
But keep it light.
Okay. Going back to my morning meditation, I just implemented this a week ago. I have a section of my meditation where I talk to my younger self, actually. So I do this podcast in my meditation, basically. And I do that because I realize there's a lot of, like most of us, unresolved things that our younger selves feel. Something I would go back and tell my 12-year-old self is, a lot of things in your life maybe make you feel insecure or unsafe or like you need to prove yourself. And I realized in my adult life that I was the person that made myself prove myself to myself. I was the last person to be able to actually say, you're fine the way you are. I'm going to let you be the way you are. It really took a long time. I always had to prove myself because I was striving for excellence. And so even at a point where everyone else stopped doing that, I was in the habit of doing that. And so I would go back and tell myself, like, hey, you don't have to prove yourself as much to yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to do that. You are safe. You don't need to be insecure for those reasons. Like, you are allowed to just be. Not everything has to be something where you gotta be perfect and you gotta prove that you belong. Like, sometimes you can just be. Mm. And the quote that I use to, like, cap end that as an adult is, the evolution from becoming to being. Mm. Like, I've given myself permission to be and not be in a constant state of trying to become. Mm. So I would go back to my younger self and plant that seed. Was that too deep?
No, not at all.
That's perfect.
Okay.
I love that.
You can go deep as long as it's a soundbite.
Okay, right?
That was a soundbite.
Good. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Make sure you listen to more deep, amazing thoughts like that one on Podcrushed.
Oh, I thought you were going to plug your podcast.
No.
This was amazing.
In her meditation.
No. Right. You don't want to listen to that. You cannot plug my podcast on your podcast? What kind of human being do you think I am? I come up in here, I'm like, hey, stop listening to this. But instead, go listen to my better podcast. Or I have a brighter pink blazer.
No, here's where it makes sense, because this is the end.
We need to isolate that sound and use that to promote our podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
No. This podcast is the best and amazing. And you three have the best questions ever, and you're so prepared, and I freaking appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
Because, you know, I do a lot of press, and sometimes there's a lot of, like, surface-level questions, and it's really nice to have a deep conversation.
Aww,
so I appreciate
you,
that.
Thank you, Lily.
Thank you. Yeah, thank
so
you
great
for
to have you.
For being here.
You can follow Lily Singh on Instagram at Lily with two L's, or you can keep up with her YouTube channel at Lily Singh.
We did the podcast?
We did the podcast.
We did it.
Now we get to do some TikToks?
Yeah, baby. Let's do it.
Stitcher.